Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, we are recording at kind of a different time for us, so I'm very curious what the energy is going to be like for this one. Yeah, it's not like the first thing in the morning, but it is definitely earlier than we normally do this. Glad to have you back.
Thank you.
For people who were listening, Andy was out last week, but he is back in fighting strength. Happy to have you.
It depends on what I have to fight.
It does. Well, I mean, that's probably always true. Yeah. So I had a question for you because I know that you and your son have been reading the Dungeon Crawler Carl, the first book.
That's right.
And yes. And I bring this up because, right, like, you know, we like to talk about what we're reading, but then, like, you know, this is in the lit RPG genre. Right. Yeah. So it kind of ties back to the
very related to our hobby here.
Yeah. Very related to our hobby. I will say, like, up front, like, so I sort of know what you're going to say, but, like, I'll say up front that, like, I enjoy these books quite a bit. I know a number of people do as well. And it sounds like your son enjoyed it. So I want to, like, so I'm putting you, Andy, on the spot, I guess. What have you thought about it, or what do you think about that book?
Yeah. Well, my main thought is joy that my son likes it. My son is a little tricky to find books that he will dig into.
Yeah.
And he is on book number 2 of Dungeon Crawler Carl. And I mean, I guess you have to know him for this, for this to land, but, you know, him asking to read a sequel is like, whoa, success.
Has that ever happened?
I'm trying to think of the last time he finished a book and was like, I want to read the next one of these. This is great. So
yeah, that's great.
So I'm really happy about it. He is in the last year, he's gotten into role playing. Mm-hmm. There's a D&D game at school that he's in. Yeah. But his main point of reference going into these books is he is a video gamer, like 100% through.
Yeah.
So he gets the D&D jokes. He gets even more the video game, like the riffs on video games.
So, yeah. Yeah.
As for me, I read a ways into the first book. And yeah, I mean, I appreciate what it's doing. I wondered if it would be like terrible, but it's not. It's not for me. Pleased to see it wasn't just all Marvel quips,
which
is what I had worried it would be.
And I think because when we were talking about it before you started, I was just like, I don't know if you're gonna like this or hate it, but it is competently written at minimum. And there are truly some like great parts to it too, right? Like but it's an interesting book because I think it does, if it grabs you, like, all you want to do is read the next one. I was on a flight recently and the person next to me was reading like the fifth one or something, you know, so it's like a flight. And like, you know, it's these days, it's pretty rare to see someone like not on their phone or their tablet or something like that. You know, so he's reading, you know, like a hardback copy of it, just like, you know, turning the page. I finally realized what he was doing. He's like, oh man, like that series is so fun. He's like, yeah, I've got the next one in my bag. As soon as I finish this one, I'm going to grab the neck. And like, and not to like profile people, but like, he did not look like a gamer nerd either.
Yeah. Either.
So I think for whatever reason, the series has kind of crossed over from like, yeah, I don't know, like the sorts of people who are going to read a self-published lit RPG book to like kind of the mainstream, which is really fascinating to me. Because it's like, I mean, you read a little bit of it, like it's very steeped in like RPG, like
it is,
like even just like vocabulary. Yeah
there's early on in the first book, there's a gag that requires you to know how like scripted events in video games work. Mm-hmm. So like the character is trying to get through a door, but the door won't open because there's like a certain number of enemies within range. And like that's something I like literally am playing video games right now where when I try to do something that's like, no, there's like still two enemies in the area. And like,
yes, you gotta go.
So it just made me wonder. So my first thought was like, whoa, that's kind of a deep cut. Then I was like, what? Like, actually, is that a joke everyone gets? Like, have at this point, has everyone, even if you are a responsible person who no longer plays video games, I mean, do you get that? You know, has it just seeped into everything so much that this humor that used to like be really niche is now just you, like, you can say it and everyone at the party will give a chuckle.
Yeah, yeah. It's so a friend of mine has this theory that, like, you can't go a single day without someone making a Star Wars or a Star Trek reference, right? Like, and I mean, those are properties that, like, are typically associated with nerds, but then at the same time you look at it and it's like, well, you know, Star Wars, right, makes $1 billion every time
they release
something. So it really is sort of like a broad thing. Like, everybody knows who Baby Yoda is, right? Like, it's just, yeah, you know, like, I would argue it's probably like, what, probably Baby Yoda is more well known than Mickey Mouse at this point. Like, it's,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
yeah. So it's like, you know, there's these things that I think we often think of as like these nerd touch points, but I think if you said like, oh, like, I leveled up, like, people understand that even if they're not playing video games. Or, like, you know, like, you still hear people say like achievement unlocked, right? You know, and it's like,
yep,
they're still saying the same kind of jokingly, although, I mean, you know, give the business guys a couple more years and they'll start using it, like, with a straight face. But like, yeah, but it's like, there are some of these things that I think have seeped into just like, this is just how we talk now. That, like, again, in like a couple hundred years, they're gonna have to have like footnotes in these books being like, and this was a, you know, like, yeah, this was a common trope in video games that you had to kill all the enemies before the door would open.
Yeah. Chris, you and I have been colleagues at work at times in the past, yeah, and I think we have both been in corporate meetings where the idea of gamification was brought up. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So
it's we've moved on from that a little bit, but I remember, yes, there was, yeah, especially in like 2010,
yes,
or so. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all anybody could talk about was gamifying.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I remember the first time. So, like, you see this with the Marvel movies too, right? Like, oh, comic book, what a nerdy thing. And then you think like, oh, this is literally everyone in the world has seen 15 of these movies, you know.
Yeah.
I remember the first time, you know, years ago when the MCU was, you know, really firing on all cylinders, I realized that I'm a nerd. I'm even a comic book nerd in some respects, and I know less about some of this stuff now than people I would chat with at work who knew more about like Black Panther's backstory. And it's kind of like, okay, like, things, I think, you know, the cycle of history moves on, I guess. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got, I've got a friend who's very into the Marvel stuff. And I remember talking with him one time, and like, I went like too deep with some sort of comic book knowledge. And like, he just kind of like looked at, like, even despite the fact that, you know, he's at every movie day one, all that sort of stuff. Like, yeah, it was just like, I made some reference to some comic, and he just looked at me like I was the biggest nerd he'd ever seen.
You know, I was I'm glad, Chris, you can still out nerd anyone that you're talking to if you have to.
I mean, there's always a hierarchy, right? Of like, I mean, what, so you're at the very top, what, you have LARPers, and then, you know, it's like, and then it's tabletop players, and like, on and on from there.
So, hey, I have a quick question that's related to the topic of this podcast. So with the Dungeon Crawler Carl books, I am curious, you have read quite a few of them now, right?
I've read all of them that have been released. Yes.
Okay. So I'm curious, have you gotten any insight or lifted anything or made a mental note of like, I should try that the next time you run a role-playing game?
That's an interesting question. I think like there's two things that series does particularly well. So I think the first one that sticks out to me is the escalation of power levels. So, I mean, you didn't get far enough to really see this happen, but, you know, as they're moving through these books, they keep on getting like more and more powerful. They've got more and more spells and things like that. But the author, Matt, I think it's Dinneman, he manages to do a really good job of continuing to ratchet up sort of like the stakes and the enemies and stuff to sort of meet that power level creep, right? Like, so even though that they, you know, they're, you know, they've got these like, you know, huge spells that can do damage, like, I mean, they could clear out that first dungeon in, you know, a single spell or whatever, right? It still sort of feels like there are stakes, right? And like, yeah, people can take damage, and, you know, not everybody has total plot armor and stuff like that. So I think that is something that has stuck out to me, of like you like ratcheting up sort of that, like, kind of that danger, as long like with the power level creeping up. So I mean, it's almost to the point where, like, you know, like if you're running like traditional D&D, I mean, you're thinking, like once you hit level 15, like they're gonna fight demigods and stuff like that. But not seeing that as like sort of a downside of the system, but as sort of like a, yeah, it's something that you can really lean into. It's like, oh, like what are the sort of the unique challenges that you could bring that way? Yeah. So I think that's really cool. I think the other thing is like, there's just a ton of like loot and like weapons and armor and stuff like that, that like that, that drop right in those books too. And they're all really fun. Right. And I think there's a lot of flavor that's added there. So I think like, yeah, this also intersects sort of like what I think like, the cipher system does really well of just like, you're just kind of showered with like all these cool little extras all the time and encouraged to use them or equip them or whatever, whatever. You know, like, so I think like that to me is like, oh, like, I mean, I think the next time I run something, I can lean into that a little bit more of just like, let's just have kind of an array of like weird stuff you can play with. Right. And like some of it might break the game, but then I think it's up to you as the GM to sort of like figure out like, okay, well that breaks the game, but like, how can I, you know, meet that kind of meet that challenge myself. So yeah, those are the two big things that stick out to me.
Interesting. Yeah. That is also one of my favorite things about the cipher system that kind of agreement at the table of like, if you just use all of the stuff I'm giving you and I promise I'll keep it coming. Even though in the cipher system games I played, people still hoard their ciphers because it's just ingrained behavior.
I know. But, it's hard. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you want to save them for the right moment, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, you just gotta use them.
There's
one other thing I wanted to just mention quickly. So again, this is like a media thing. So I started playing Clair Obscur Expedition 33 recently.
Oh, yeah.
It's truly excellent. Like, so if it works for you, it's a great game. I mean, it is like, it's like a love letter to, you know, 90s JRPGs, you know, 90s and early 2000s JRPGs. But you know, seen through sort of a lens of like French culture, to be honest, right? Mm-hmm. It is really good. I finished the first act. I'm told that the story kind of continues to get really good. There's a lot of people who like will hear that I'm playing it, and they're like, "Let me know as soon as you're done. I want to be able to talk about this."
Yeah, fun.
Talk about this with you. So it's really good. That's just a game recommendation, and then Slay the Spire 2 is my other game recommendation. If you know, you know. It's that has come out in early access, and it's consumed, I think, my life and John Corey of Zombie Strains, his life, and a couple other friends. Yeah.
My I know this isn't the video game podcast, but this has a tie to tabletop games. So I took some time off of work after recently, and I binged a video game.
Oh, nice.
And it's like, it was a little bit of random. I played through a Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2, which is
okay.
Our game titles are a little bit getting
that's,
a little
that's
ridiculous,
a perfect title though. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a sequel to like a 20 year old game, a beloved game. And so yeah, I binged through it and you know, it got me thinking like, could I run this like tabletop? Like, you know, and the answer was, I don't think so. I don't think I have players that would really get into it, but I did dig out a few old books, you know, from the World of Darkness and was flipping through them and being like, yeah, I remember what it was like to be in the 90s and to be an edgelord, you know.
Did you play that back in the day?
No, not regularly. I have played and run once or twice various games in the World of Darkness, but the one game in the 90s I did play most in the World of Darkness was Hunter, which was like you're a person and you can get revenge on all these pretentious like vampires and werewolves that are in your city.
Yeah.
So
that actually sounds pretty great too.
That was just, I mean, that was a unique, the way that White Wolf like built out that world across all these game lines and hundreds of supplements. That's where we get the term splat book, I think, from.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's just something I don't think it's like economically feasible anymore. Mm-hmm. It had all sorts of problems, you know, from a gameplay perspective, but it also was pretty fun. I mean, this, like, there's, if you are a vampire player, there's like dozens of books with chock full of like setting secrets and plot developments and cool stuff. So these days, you know, you get like one core book a year, you know, one book a year, and it's probably a much better way to produce a game line. But you know, there was something about that pace of like 30 paperback supplements a year that was kind of appealing, I guess.
Yeah, that's interesting.
None of them play tested or like, you know, and then, you know, there'd be like five authors of a book and like clearly they had never been in a room together or discussed like what the book was about. And, you know, just it was kind of a glorious Wild West sort of era.
That's really kind of charming in a way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's any other like any other monster in popular culture other than like a vampire that can really sustain something like that. I think there's something just so, I don't know, like alluring, like this is going to sound like a pitch for like, I love vampires, but like, yeah, but like there's something about like that, like kind of like human, but elevated and kind of like one step removed from humanity. That's like really, really appealing, right? Like there's obviously, right, like kind of like you mentioned like the 90s edgelord, like, right, there's that part of it too, of like this, like, I don't need society because I'm, you know, this ancient being sort of thing. But like, yeah, but I mean, like the thought of like picking up a vampire game, right, like is appealing because it's like, it is a different sort of power fantasy.
Yeah.
Too, from like the typical like oh, I'm a human, but I'm like a human fighter, I'm a human sorcerer, something like that. It's like, no, like I'm something like apart, and we can kind of be these edgelords together, or, you know, we can have sort of this thing that interacts with the human world, but we're still a part of it. Yeah.
I agree that, you know, maybe in a future episode we need to find ourselves like an old school vampire GM or something, mm-hmm. and just like pick their brain. But you know, you can see it. So, you know, in the vampire setting, there's all these other classic monsters and they all have their own game lines. You know, there's werewolf, there's mages, there's changelings, there's ghosts, you know, like there's all these other things. But there is just something about the vampire. Like, you know, is it that with a vampire, I mean, you can tell a lot of stories, a lot of different types of story, and still have it feel like you're a vampire, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas with some of the other monsters, as cool as they may be, you know, how many different types of story can you tell with a werewolf?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like some, but I don't think as many as like with a vampire. And so you know, I don't know. I do think it is pretty interesting. It, you know, think when flipping back through those old 90s RPG vampire books, you know, one thing that stands out is even back then there was this incredible tension between like the way the game wanted you to play and the way everyone you knew in real life played, right? Oh. So the game is this like, you're this tortured monster. Mm-hmm. Everything is misery. You're the worst, you know, you're, you know, woe is you.
Yeah.
Everyone you knew played it, you know, everyone had, it's the whole trend. Everyone you knew had a trench coat and dual katanas and submachine guns and was playing, you know, I'm a superhero, but a vampire, right?
Yeah, they're
you
playing know. Blade, yeah.
Right. And I mean, I'm exaggerating for effect here, but even in the game itself, it couldn't, like, you can go so many ways with vampires. Like, the game itself struggled to keep its own fan base, I think, playing the game that the authors wanted to be writing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm maybe overstepping a little bit on that and exaggerating, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's something to that, like that kind of healthy tension between like the vision and what actually happens at the table. I think, right.
Yeah.
Like you got to kind of meet in the middle a little bit, but yeah, I mean, this is something like it comes up on our podcast quite a bit, like that, like a lot of D&D games and other kind of like, you know, fantasy RPG games like devolve into sort of like this like whimsical like adventure sort of stuff. And like very few games I think are written in a way that it's like they're encouraging that, like, oh, like everybody should be telling jokes all the time, right?
Yeah.
Like, but that's just how I think humans interact, right? Like you're finally getting down to sit at the table with your friends. Like you're gonna want to kind of joke around a little bit. Like you don't want to sit down and be like, you know, play like this, you know, morbid, morose, you know, group of vampires who aren't having any fun because they're, you know, so sad, so sad all the time. Right. Like, you know, but I mean, but you also like, I think you need something to bounce off of too, right? Like you sort of need that arch, like this is the vision of it. And then it's like, well, like, okay, I mean, I'm going to meet you a little bit there, but like, it's still going to be funny or fun for me to do this.
Well, I think that is an interesting topic. Mm-hmm. The idea that there's just this like gravitational pull towards a certain way of playing an RPG almost no matter what it is, you know. Like, I mean, just to keep with our vampire example, you know, you can write a book about how being a vampire is a curse and the worst thing that could possibly happen to you. But it also, you know, there's a whole chapter of combat powers, and you can turn invisible and you can charm people to do what you want. And, you know, this whole array of RPG powers that just almost, it's not like that's opposed to the vampire as a curse thing, but it's just, it's intention. It's going to be constantly in tension with that theme. And then when you bring to it like the way that social gatherings will default to sort of jokey camaraderie across almost any type of like activity. And I think, you know, I find that kind of interesting. And, you know, maybe some of the fun of vampire is or games, heavily themed games like that, that really want you to play a certain way, but are fighting maybe their own rules and fighting the just human nature of how we like to interact with our friends. I don't know, maybe that's part of the fun, right? But it is kind of interesting.
It's have you ever watched What We Do in the Shadows, the
TV show? I watched the movie
which was
amazingly funny.
It's really good. I mean, the show is fantastic too, but it sort of just takes that setup, and it's like, well, what if we made a sitcom sort of out of it? Right, so it's super effective. It is so funny. It's like, it's really great because it does take that, like, you know, like, what if you are sort of this immortal being, right? Like, what does that look like day to day, right? Like, so they do, right? They have to kind of figure out, like, well, how are we going to live together in this house, right? Because we're a bunch of vampires, but we still need to, like, you know, do chores or, you know, whatever, right? Like, so a lot of the humor comes from that, like, okay, you're an immortal being, but you still sort of have to exist in this world in some way. Yeah. Like, and you still might have wants and desires outside of just, like, I need blood. I need to feed every night, right? Like, you probably want companionship or, you know, whatever, right? So there's a lot to explore there, I think, that is really fun. And, like, to me, like, that, I can't imagine playing vampire like these days and not looking at What We Do in the Shadows as a touch point like how to think about that. So it's not just Interview with a Vampire. It's like, you know, there's an element of that, but there's also kind of this, you know, What We Do in the Shadows kind of like lurking back there of like, yeah, like, you know, what if you had a roommate for 200 years? Like what sort of, you know, like what sort of arguments would you have over the course of the years? Like,
right.
All sorts of things. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. It's interesting. The other thing that I was thinking about too is like, you know, so I've got a 5-year-old and a 10-year-old, but I mean, like, kids love sort of playing. I don't know, like my 5-year-old loves to wrestle and stuff, right? Like, in like something you do, like you just do this with kids, like you pretend to like eat them, right? Like, you know, like wouldn't that be you know, that, but like that's just funny.
One of the weird things that every parent just kind of instinctively does at some point that probably is weird, but
yeah, I mean, it is, yeah, it does feel weird, but it also, I think, it is this kind of like basic like desire of like, oh, I'm gonna, like, you're so cute, I'm gonna eat you up, right? Like that sort of thing. And like, in some ways I feel like vampires takes that like that sense of like, oh, this is a fun and good thing to do with my children and like turns it into like, oh, but like, what if you actually had to do that, right?
Chris, something very, I need you to run a game of vampire because I think it might be the most messed up thing so I really need you to think about running a game of vampire.
I don't know if I have it in me, but yeah, anyway, that's sort of a digression, but I am thinking about that in terms of like, yeah, like if we think about like the monsters that are really effective, I think a lot of it is sort of the monsters that make sense to a child or like, yeah, or kind of like come out of like, I don't know, that sense of like when you're a kid, you want to be scared every once in a while. Like, you don't want to be afraid, right? But like, you want to be scared, right? Like, you want your parents to jump out every once in a while and spook you and be like, ah, like, you know, jump scare. Like, those sorts of things are really exciting and fun for a kid, right? And it's like, that is the real, and then I think when you get older and you're looking for like kind of monster stuff or scary movies and stuff, like those are the things that you gravitate towards. It's like, I want that sense of like that jump scare, right? Like, there's something about that that's really
appealing. Yeah, you want the thrill within, you know, within the boundaries of, you know, on some level you're actually quite safe.
Yeah.
So, but you want to taste a little bit of what it might be like to not feel safe, right?
Yeah.
It's the awesome part of watching horror movies and reading horror stuff. And yeah. I guess playing horror games too.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wish I could handle them more. There's so much. Yeah.
we'll get you there. We'll get you. We'll start with your messed up vampire game and then we'll proceed from there.
We'll keep going. Yeah. Okay, cool. So we've been going for a little bit. I had one question that I did want to ask you. This was going to be kind of our topic and it might not be a big discussion, but we'll see.
Sure. Maybe.
Yeah. One thing I've been thinking about lately, so I've been playing a game with Matt Wilson. It's in the Warhammer Fantasy universe and it's really great and like we're having tons of fun. And we're now maybe like, are we a year, 2 years into the campaign, something like that. And
amazing,
I'm realizing,
by the way, congrats.
It's great. I mean, like that, this group has been together for over a decade at this point.
Yeah, incredible.
I love it. But I'm realizing that the character that I'm playing, like the way that I want to play her does not match up with the character sheet that I created right at the beginning.
Yep.
Yeah. So the question that I had for you was like, how do you handle like requests to respec, right? I really want to do is say like, okay, cool. Like I got all this experience and I've got all these points that I could assign. Like I'd love to sort of start from scratch and like, not reinvent the character necessarily, but I want to like manipulate this to sort of like start to fit a little bit more of like the emerging vision of what I have for this character, especially as we get into it, you know, and we're a good ways into the game. Some of the characters are like, you know, and these players are just better at this, right? I'm just not very good at like thinking this through. Like they've min-maxed their characters a little bit to the point where they're effectively doing like what they wanted them to do from like the start of the game.
Yeah.
And I'm just not quite feeling that with my character. And I think that's okay to not have it like totally min-max, but like I'm also feeling like there's ways that I want this character, right? Like she's sort of a sorcerer. She uses like this, she's a seamstress, so she uses like this needle and thread magic and stuff. Yeah. And like, I just don't have enough points in my magic, magic pools and stuff like that. So anyway, so my question for you is like, how do you handle, have you had character or have players ever asked to respec their characters?
So yes, not a lot though. Mm-hmm. And not it. My attitude towards it these days is if, you know, I play relatively infrequently, and the goal is to have fun. That's really about it. So my answer to the question of like, it would be more fun if I could swap my points around and rebuild my character, my answer to you is like, is going to be sure. Like, absolutely. Yeah, right. Yeah, like just on a practical level. Mm-hmm. Now, in generally speaking, I am fully the reason you just stated for wanting to redo your character sheet is, in my opinion, the exact right one. Mm-hmm. I have a vision for the way I want to play the character, but either because I made a mistake or I didn't know the rules well or for whatever other reason, this character is mechanically built in a way that like makes it impossible for me to play them the way I want. You're not asking for superpowers. You're not asking to break the rules or have exceptions made for your character. Mm-hmm. I think that's a totally legit reason to respec. And, you know, I personally would have no problem with you doing that. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons is because this is an even worse problem in some video games, by the way. But, you know, in an RPG, you're being asked to like, you've been playing D&D for a long enough time that you know the pitfalls of like the D&D mechanics. So when you, Chris, with years of playing D&D and running D&D under your belt, sit down to make a D&D character, you're not likely to make a big mechanical mistake.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, let's say you're sitting down to play GURPS for the first time and you're building your character. Like you're being asked to make decisions that the game considers pretty permanent, but you haven't even had a chance to like test them out and see how they work. So, you know, what happens if you put all your points into something that ends up not working at all the way you thought it would? Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think, you know, I think most GMs in that case would say, yeah, you didn't, you know, at the time you made your character, you did not know how the best way to mechanically represent the character. Now you do. Mm-hmm. So let's rebuild your character. Yeah. Like, is there possible? Can you abuse that? Yes. Yeah. You know, can that, could you use that to break a game if you really wanted to? Sure. Mm-hmm. I don't think most people really want to do that. So my very long-winded answer ends up with like a, yeah, go ahead, respect your character. Yeah, if you're doing it every week, you know, then let's talk about like what you want out of the game and why you're not satisfied with it.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
yeah, in your case, yeah, sure, respect your character. You know, if it makes sense to like work it into the plot or the narrative, that's even better. But if you also just need to be like, I need to just rearrange these points and pretend that it's always been this way, that's also fine. So okay, what do you think about that big monologue I just gave?
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think what you're getting to is sort of the heart of it, is like, it's not, this is not an attempt to break the game. It's an attempt to get closer to sort of like what the story that we're trying to tell together wants to do, right? Because it's like, you know, like I'm looking at my character sheet, like in this specific example, I'm looking at my character sheet being like, I've never used that like these points, right? And it's you know, it's like, well, I mean, reallocating those towards something that is like narratively interesting and stuff, right? Like so it's like the character is like, every time that I cast a spell in that game, it's like, oh, like this feels like this is what the character should be doing. Every time I'm like trying to swing a sword or something like that, or like, you know, stab someone, it's like, this does not feel like what I should be doing. You know, so, and I think everybody can feel that at the table too, right? So that's like, that's my specific example, but I think I'm with you. Like, if a player came to me and is like, oh, like this just isn't, you know, this isn't working, or it's not quite right, it's like, yeah, by all means, like let's just change it. I think there are, you know, change it a little bit. I think if someone's like, well, I want to start from scratch, and like, okay, so this sorcerer character is now a fighter, you know, a fighter or whatever, it's like, okay, well, let's just do a new character, right? At that point. So I think there are limits there. I think if it's like, if you're kind of directionally correct with what your character is, and you just want to modify it a little bit, like, yeah, like let's do that. But like, yeah, at a certain point, I think it does become like this is just a new character at this point. And like, that's also fine. And I think, again, to your other point, like if you're doing it every week, like let's have a conversation about that. But like, you know, once a campaign, probably once a campaign, like I think that's totally doable and makes a lot of sense.
Well, most RPG systems I've found tend to front load the critical decisions. So in most RPG systems, leveling up means slight tweaks to those fundamental core decisions you made at the beginning. And like, if you're one of your fundamental core decisions, where I'm putting a ton of points into this, like this whole section of the character that I'll never use, you're developing system mastery as you play the game, but you're stuck with this character you built when you had no system mastery.
Yes.
That's not fun. And also like, you're not really even playing the game in the intended way anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, what's the point? I suppose.
Yeah, that gets to something that does get stuck in my craw a little bit about systems. It's like, yeah, you do make so many decisions before you get to play. And especially if you're new to the game, like new to the game, it's hard to know, like, am I going to even like this? Or like, or is my GM, or, you know, actually even going to use these rules? Right. Like, I mean, if you sat down at my table and I was running D&D and you had spec'd your character up to like, I don't know, like be perfectly good at like handling rations or something, you know, or like exhaustion.
Or you put a ton of stuff into like maritime skills.
Yeah. Yeah. Or something. Or like, I mean, I think the classic example is like the ranger in D&D, right? Like having all sorts of abilities tied to like the location that you're in, and that location doesn't come up. Right. There's like all these things that I think like can feel like, oh, this is going to be eventful and really important for the character, but like if that doesn't come up at the table, it's like, or it doesn't work out quite, it's like, okay, well, like, you know what am I doing here, right? Like, it's actually one of the reasons why I like the funnel concepts so much, because it's like you can kind of play around with like these almost disposable characters that you don't quite know yet before, and like get a feel for the system. It's like, oh, like this is the sort of actions that I like to take. I'm going to start tuning this character that way, versus it being like, okay, like you've done an hour or 2 hours of homework, right? And then you're going to sit down at the table and like, you're going to have to stick with that for the rest, you know, for this, this campaign you're running. Like it can feel a little demotivating. I think if you can get stuff right, like then it feels good. But for me, it's like, I wish more systems had more built in for like, okay, like let's get a feel for this. And now you're going to make some more permanent decisions.
Agreed. I mentioned earlier, this is a problem for video games. And I realize that the situation is a little different with respeccing like a video game character versus mm-hmm. respeccing a PC you've been role playing for a year. But mm-hmm. one of the first things I do when I start up any sort of like RPG related game is I Google, can you respec
in yeah. this game? Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Because, I mean, so many of these games, you know, ask you to put your skill points. You have like a very limited number of skill points. And I need to know if I put them into lockpicking, is that a huge waste? Is that, am I going to regret that 40 hours later?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Like, what? And, you know, tabletop RPGs, you know, I mean, they have the same problem, but the solution, you know, they're more flexible because at the end of the day, these are conversations with your friends. So it's yeah. easier to go in and respec
yeah.
than in a video game where there's only one item that lets you respec and it costs $10 trillion and, you know,
yes, Yeah, look at you, yeah. Dark Souls. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the Souls likes are, I mean, that for those games, the getting your stuff trapped in a garbage build is part actually of the yes, experience. Yeah, but yeah.
yeah, that's, yeah, everybody's got to do it. Yeah. yeah. All right. Well, it's, we should wrap up there. Do you have any final thoughts on that? Or
no, except I would be interested, you know, in a future episode. I would like to hear how that campaign is going. Mm-hmm. And I would be interested in more details about like how you came to the conclusion that your character's kind of quote mechanical build was not really supporting the game you wanted to play. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would like more details, maybe in the context of more details about how the whole campaign is
yeah.
going.
So. Yeah, I'll give you the quickish answer is that there are a couple players who like I feel like their builds are about right. And whenever they take actions, they get a lot more dice than I get. So,
yes. Yeah, so I'm like, seeing you just big puppy dog eyes. Like, yeah, like why don't I get that many like, dice when it's my turn?
I know. Like, I still get to do cool stuff and all that. But, like, yeah. There's, yeah. yeah. But, I mean, again, like, I don't think Matt is going to have a problem with that necessarily, although he can tell me, I guess. But
and now that you've called him out on a podcast, you know, he pretty fine. Much maybe has to get
I will never mention this campaign ever again. And that's how you know how it went. But yeah, we should maybe just have him on too.
I'll flip
that idea to him. And he can.
And I think he might have played some Vampire back in the day, so we can get some juicy what it was like in the trenches of 1998 Vampire.
Yeah, the trenches of your trench coat. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That was a good one.
All right. Well, that does it for us. You can go listen to Andy and John on Zombie Strains. You should go check that out. And I think that does it for us. So I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.